What do I want to see? I want to see that. What do you want to see? I want to see this in front. Hey there.
Door shut downstairs.
What?
Does the door shut downstairs before 6:30?
No, because Ian's Pizza is open. Yeah. So that's always open. That's open whenever they're open. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, have some stuff downstairs.
Okay, and there is a swipe thing on the outside too. If it is ever locked, I believe there is a swipe code
The
thing
day
down there.
topic.
Yeah.
Here for the meeting.
What?
I stay for the meeting.
Yeah. You're gonna, it shouldn't be long. There's only really one agenda item on it.
Will it go to 8 o'clock?
It usually only goes an hour.
It's at 8 o'clock. That's okay.
It's 6:30 to 8. Yeah. It starts at 6:30.
Need to take notes for it?
What?
Do I need to take notes?
No. You just need to be present because you're going to be introduced as a new staff. That's all.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's all. You don't have to do anything. You might have to say a few words, You're kind of used to it now, but
not taking any chances of forgetting to record, are you?
I can't hear you. I don't think you're muted. You're just quiet. Oh, wait. Now,
talk, talk.
that was me. If no one else is here, I'm not going to use the headphones because I didn't.
I was just saying, you're not taking any chances of forgetting to record the meeting.
Yeah. It's too easy to forget that.
Agreed.
Let me
I'm
pause.
gonna
Let me
just.
pause it though. It started with recording. That's why.
All right, I'll wait for her camera to turn on. And Tom's here.
Yeah. Hey.
All right. Okay,
We're in business.
it's 6:32. I will call the policy board meeting to order for January 8th, 2025. We have a quorum. We do have a new member, but I don't see him present yet. So we can postpone introductions to another time. Let's move on with item number 2, approval of the December 4th meeting minutes, and I'm aware of a few corrections. Alex, if you could walk us through those, please.
Yes. So there was a misnumbering, my fault, misnumbering of resolutions that occurred. And as a result, I need to make corrections in the minutes. So that would, what I'm asking is resolution 23 be changed to resolution 26. 24 needs to be 27. 25 needs to be 28. And 26 will be 29.
And you're updating.
And that is updating the December minutes. So those are corrections to make to our December minutes.
Incorporate in the motion, and you can indicate I joined at 6:33 if you wish.
Oh, yes, that as well.
Would somebody like to make a motion incorporating those changes?
Williams moves to incorporate those changes and approve them.
I can second.
And Field seconds. Any discussion? Seeing and hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? That motion passes. Thank you. Item three is communications. We have the two letters here for WSDOT. Alex?
Yes, those are just pretty straightforward things. It's good news that all the numbers are correct as we anticipated and as we budgeted. And of course, I prepared this stuff a while ago. And then yes, and then also the endorsement of our UPWP. Those are the two items from WSDOT. From WSDOT at, and as well as usual, also FHWA.
Okay, excellent. Any questions? Okay, I would like to pause quickly and ask you, Alex, if you could please introduce your new staff member who just joined us.
Yes. Well,
now I don't see. Oh, there,
we
there.
We have a spot for him on the agenda, but yes, I'd like to introduce. This is Prasad, and he is filling the position that Colleen had been in. He joined us, I believe. Prasad, do you remember?
December 9th. I joined on December 9th.
I almost said 8th, but no, he didn't start on the Sunday. He started on.
It was last year already, so it's been a while.
Last year, yeah, he's been here. He started last year.
Welcome.
Happy to have Prasad. I think he's learning a lot since he's been here, and we're learning a lot from him as well. And a little later in the agenda, I'll give him a little chance to introduce himself and learn a little bit more about his transportation planning experience.
Oh, okay. I did see it down on the agenda. I just knew we had introductions at the beginning. That's why I thought I would bring it up.
Oh, so. I guess I doubled it.
I just didn't see the bottom. Sorry. Fine. Okay. Item four is public comment for items not on the MPO agenda. Is there anyone present who wishes to speak or to address the board at this time? I don't see any guests here. Moving on to item five is presentation of the transit development plan and potential adoption of MPO resolution 2025, number one, adopting the TDP for the Madison urban area. I presume we're turning this over to Ben.
Yes, we sure are. Can you all see the presentation, I'm hoping?
As long as he double clicks to end, there you go. All right, thank you. Floor is yours, Ben. Although we don't hear you. I'm asking to unmute him.
Yeah. Okay, Ben.
Okay. Sorry about that. I was clicking the unmute button and it was ignoring me. So, but we're here now. It looks like you're seeing the correct screen. After many years of working on this, a little backstory, because I've actually been working on this project longer than many of you have been on the policy board. It was first assigned to me when I started in January of 2019. And for various reasons, including the network redesign and the whole Metro Forward initiative and the launch of Bus Rapid Transit, several times at the request of Metro staff and Tom Lynch and his staff, we postponed moving forward with this at various points because we knew that it was going to either be a redundant effort or it was going to be missing some really important points and other developments that were going on. So it's not that transit planning wasn't happening, it's that it was happening outside the scope of the transit development plan process. So that said, I'm very pleased to finally be able to say, here is a final, complete, almost complete transit development plan. In the agenda, it does note that you could adopt this plan by resolution. Historically, The TDP has been, only the recommendations of the TDP have been adopted. The rest of it is sort of a standalone. It's a plan. It is what it is. But neither the MPO Policy Board nor the City of Madison Transportation Commission adopt the plan itself. So at this point, you don't need to adopt it. On the other hand, if you feel like after all this time, the last transit development plan was for the period of 2013 to 2017, if you feel that, yes, it makes sense for us to have an officially adopted plan, there is a draft resolution that you could adopt if you wanted to. So that's up to the board to decide. I'm not going to go through the entire plan, but I'm going to hit on some highlights. There are a lot of tables and charts and details in the plan that would make really boring PowerPoint. So rather than subject you to that, I just want to call out some of the important things. Mainly, there is no state or federal requirement for this plan. However, the three-party cooperative agreement between the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Metro, and the MPO says that the MPO leads the transit development plan process, and it requires the transit development plan to include transit system policies, an assessment of service demands, planned service improvements, transit fares, and transit system capital facility needs. And again, oddly enough, does not require any recommendations to be a part of this, but traditionally we've done that. In talking to Justin and his staff, they do expect to be able to have the staff capacity to work on the already drafted recommendations that they just haven't had a chance to review and make sure that they think are reasonable and achievable. So hopefully we can get through that process in 2025. I should also note, well, no, here we are, slide three, I'm on the right one. In addition to those five components required under the cooperative agreement, this TDP update also needed to account for six additional considerations. One, the transit network redesign resulted in fewer routes spaced farther apart, but with higher frequencies than the previous network. Rapid Route A and planned Rapid Route B, Metro's first bus rapid transit routes, offer even higher service frequencies and level boarding stations spaced farther apart than standard bus stops. This was the first transit development plan to be developed following the City of Madison's Racial Equity and Social Justice Initiative, and so it takes a closer look at equity than prior plans have done. And of course, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, travel patterns of many choice riders has changed, although travel behaviors of transit-dependent populations were less impacted. The TDP considers these changing travel patterns and ridership demand. And finally, with routes spaced farther apart, the importance of first and last mile connections to and from the transit system are of increased importance. Having very slow reaction time on my computer here. Go on to slide four. There we go. So the TDP goals remain unchanged from the adopted 2013 to 2017 TDP. The nine of them are there. I won't read them to you. But you know, essentially, we didn't identify any real need to modify these or update them. This is the current Metro service system map. And transit service is not provided on the majority of roads in any community. And routes are usually separated by at least 1/2 mile when they run parallel to each other. The Metro network has many routes within 1/2 mile of each other in many areas. However, in outer areas, routes are often a mile or more apart. And for example, the route D1 and C1 over on the far east side here, that's almost exactly a mile between Milwaukee and Cottage Grove. And so folks who live in the middle have to walk 1/2 mile minimum in any direction to get to a bus stop. And that's really sort of the, as far as we can ask folks to go to get to buses. And we'll look more at the service area here in the next slide. And I should also say with the network redesign, there were new stops on new routes. There are dedicated bus lanes for east-west bus rapid transit, increased service frequency, as we'll see on quite a few routes, transit signal priority, new local Sun Prairie service, and potential for future Monona and Cottage Grove routes. We'll touch on that Monona one again, but there's actually a contract in place and a route that's been published that will be an extension of Route 38, and that will go into effect on March 3rd. And then, as noted before, the routes are farther from one another than in the pre-2023 network. So here we have the Metro Monona Transit Service Areas in 2023. So there are a few little changes, like Rapid Route, what's become Rapid Route A still runs on Stoughton Road rather than cutting over to, oh, the road is escaping me. Minor little changes, but overall, this map is essentially still correct.
I have a question. Sorry to interrupt. I'm not aware that Route A goes on Stoughton Road at all. Is that what you intended to say?
Yes, it is. So at MATC, it goes up right and then goes across Anderson. And Route A came down Stoughton Road and then turned left and ran out East Washington Avenue again.
Right, but it just cuts through a neighborhood now and doesn't.
Right, and that's what I'm saying is that the map shows it on Stoughton, but now it goes, I think it's.
Got it. Okay.
So there are some minor changes, but at this scale, they're really minor. Okay. And so you can see in orange the weekday peak and off peak service area, and kind of the peachy color is weekday peak service only. And then the blue is the supplemental school service area only. Red lines are serviced generally throughout the day. And dark blue lines are serviced during peak periods only. Service areas are generally considered to be 1/4 of a mile from bus routes, although the service area for bus rapid transit is generally considered to be 1/2 mile from stations. In this map, all service areas are shown as 1/4 mile from bus stops. When Metro begins to provide service within the city of Monona on March 3rd, the service areas for routes G and L will increase as they currently travel through Monona without stopping. A new hourly extension of Route 38 will replace service currently provided by the Monona Express and Lyft. So there are going to be some minor changes. Rather than doing the whole loop or the lake loop, the extension of Route 38 will cut down. It'll only do a little bit on Winnequah and then cut back and across. So some other minor changes, but pretty small in the scale of things. This map shows relative area employment and population densities within the Metro Transit service area. Most areas within Madison, Middleton, and Sun Prairie with high residential and employment densities are served by Metro. Fitchburg and Verona have more geographically limited transit services, but most of the densest parts of these communities do have transit services. McFarland, Cottage Grove, DeForest, and Wanakee have areas with relatively high population and employment density, but do not have transit service. Monona, again, is currently served by Monona Express and Lyft, but will become a Metro service partner in 2025, and that service is not shown on this map. Because again, this is the current transit service area. Metro's frequent service network in 2023, this is, I think, one of the most exciting things that I'll be showing you this evening. The frequent service network is the group of corridors in the transit system that have consistent 15-minute or better service throughout the midday on weekdays in both directions. This service standard allows transit riders to use the system without a schedule, which is attractive for occasional transit users making a variety of transit trips. The 15-minute headways may be provided by one route or a group of two or three routes, but the service must not contain any service gaps that are longer than 15 minutes. The frequent service network was expanded from 13.5 miles to 69 miles with the 2023 network redesign. Note that the version of this map that is in the draft TDP only shows Route D on Johnson Street between State Street and Fordham Avenue. As I was putting this presentation together, I realized that was a mistake. This route also travels south or westbound on Gorham Street. So the map in the draft will be replaced with the corrected version that is shown here. And again, the length of the frequent service network in the text of the plan will also be corrected from 67.1 to 69 miles. And for comparison, there is the map of the 2013 frequent service network. Again, just 13.5 miles in length. And after the network redesign, again, expanded to 69 miles in length. This
a quick question for you, if you can go back one slide, please. What is that little loop by on Gammon Road at, Gammon and Mineral Point? What is that?
That is where I think it's H and J and maybe another route that I can't think of offhand, all do sort of a loop there to end their route. And it ends up stacking
Wow.
up so that even if it's not the same route, there are multiple routes and there are buses that are coming at least every 15 minutes during the midday period.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's sort of an odd one. We had to double check to make sure it was correct. And then the Sun Prairie Park and Ride again, between routes SW and the A extension, also ends up qualifying as frequent service, even though those individual routes are half hourly, hourly. Just the timing of them ends up that it meets that at least one bus is coming every 15 minutes. So here we see the fixed route service, annual vehicle revenue hours and ridership. So this does not include paratransit. There's a complimentary chart showing paratransit ridership that is not in the presentation, but is in the plan. And for 2003 to 2023, and as you can see, metro ridership, like that of most transit agencies across the country, has not fully recovered from the dramatic reductions that came with the COVID-19 pandemic. With many former choice riders now working remotely at least part of the time, it's unlikely that these riders will return to using transit at pre-pandemic levels. Instead, Metro must look to new riders and riders making non-commute trips to make up for those lost riders. Bus Rapid Transit is intended to entice new riders to use the system through reduced travel times and the convenience of short headways between buses. Madison's transit-oriented development overlay zone allows taller buildings, increased residential density, and lower or no parking requirements for new development along frequent service corridors in order to encourage the development of new jobs and housing in these corridors, which will further bolster ridership on these routes. I should also say that although 2024 numbers are not shown here because we didn't have them when this was drafted in 2023, and it generally takes until August of the following year before the National Transit Database publishes official final ridership numbers, 2024 is looking really good for ridership. There were months where ridership was essentially the same as in 2019, although that isn't true of the entire year. But they've definitely made a big headway towards getting back to those 2019 levels in 2024. The green line is the annual vehicle revenue hours. So not deadhead time, not empty buses driving to the beginning of a route, but actual in-service hours of what was being operated. and we expect that those 2023 hours will be continuing for the foreseeable future. That's sort of the way that the network redesign was planned, that ultimately they're actually don't require as many buses and don't require as many service hours because there aren't as many peak only buses that were only serving choice commuters who aren't riding the bus anymore. This is Metro's red dot ridership map for February 2024. Stops are represented by red dots, with stops with more boardings shown with larger red dots. Pretty intuitive. You can see the South Transfer Point. You can see Epic clearly in downtown and along the University and along University Avenue. And then along the Isthmus, very high ridership. And you can, some of this is where the bus is running, but also you can see this string of ridership going down Park Street and Fish Hatchery, that's really supporting the alignment of the Route B. Same thing, not quite as much along Packers Avenue, but as redevelopment occurs there will be more ridership there, we hope. And then along Northport, some big ridership generators there, Madison College, and then out by the Easttown Mall. And very slow on the slide change here. Okay, so this is a similar map, not quite the same because paratransit doesn't really have, set stops. So we put together a paratransit service hotspot map. And so this is the concentration of locations that had 25 or more trips just in the second half of 2023. And this is all post-network redesign. So it says between 6-12, I should have really written it to say starting on 6/13, which was the when the network redesign went into effect. So it's that 6 month period or 5.5 month period where the network redesign was in effect. And let's see, anything else here? Although hotspots exist throughout the service area, pardon me, concentrations of paratransit stops exist in downtown Madison, near the UW and VA hospitals, along Fish Hatchery Road, south of the Beltline, near the Hilldale Mall, along Watts Road in southwest Madison, and in North Madison. And although paratransit service is available in the city of Sun Prairie, no locations in Sun Prairie had 25 or more visits in this time period. And then also noting that paratransit service will become available in the city of Monona on March 3rd. So right now there's no paratransit service in Monona. We'll see how that changes after they become eligible for paratransit service. This age sex pyramid shows the population age brackets, shows that population brackets over age 65 will experience much more growth than younger age brackets in the next 20 years. This silver tsunami is already underway as baby boomers age and birth rates decline. As aging typically results in increasing health and mobility issues, this aging population will require special attention to ensure that they're able to complete trips for social, employment, recreational, healthcare, and other purposes. And again, this comes back to that greater separation between routes and between BRT stops and trouble with folks being able to make that increased trip. Here we have a drawing of South Whitney at Tokay northbound, which is served by routes D, E, and J. The image was drawn by Rachel Lichtman and is used with permission. She's been drawing a series of the inaccessible bus stops of Madison that are being published through Tone Madison online. And I've been in communication with her about these, and in the TDP talk about how a lot of the issues she raises are not actually ADA related. In this, the text about this picture, she talks about needing to wait at a stop that doesn't have a bench and doesn't have any shade after going to a medical appointment. And that's certainly unfortunate. But there's no ADA requirement that there be shade. There's no ADA requirement that there be a bench. There is, however, an ADA prohibition against using caution tape in the right-of-way like this. But ultimately, that's not Metro's responsibility. So even with accessible pads at bus stops are only truly accessible if they're on the accessible pedestrian network, which is the responsibility of the municipality in which the stop is located. Metro frequently receives complaints about construction projects blocking sidewalks and accessible routes to bus stops, but they have no control over those situations. So whether it's a city crew that's tearing up a sidewalk to put in new sanitary sewer or, you know, fix a leak, or a private construction company that just put up tape and closed off the sidewalk, Metro doesn't really have any say over that. Here we have Metro historical cash fares adjusted for inflation. This shows adult cash fares in constant value adjusted to 2022 from 1970 to 2022. Although fares have increased from 25 cents to $2 in that time, in constant $22, fares have varied between $1 and nearly $2.75, but have generally hovered near $2. And again, as putting this presentation together, it occurs to me that with recent inflation, right now, you know, the relative value of your $2 fare is even better than this chart shows it to be. Fares are probably at a relatively record low at this point. The National Academies of Sciences, this is a big crazy chart, sorry about it, but it also shows some really great stuff. The National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine published actual and projected ridership for 2012 through 2018, investigating the impact of multiple variables on transit ridership in communities across the country. Although ridership decreased during this period, Madison Metro outperformed expectations and lost 6.5% less ridership than modeling predicted. This and other studies find that internal variables, those controlled by the transit agency and policymakers, show signs of causing significant impacts on travel demand by bus transit mode, While the external factors, except for gas price, do not. It indicates that the socioeconomic factors that are beyond the control of transit managers and operators do not necessarily contribute to the effectiveness and efficiency of transit systems. This reveals that the job of building ridership belongs to and is within the reach of policymakers, transit managers, and operators, and that to achieve this goal, all efforts should focus on providing better transit systems that work more efficiently. And so here they have the actual 2012 and 28 values and the percent differences. And then, I'm sorry, I think the 2018 here was actually their projected, and then the absolute was what they actually measured. And then I tried to get into the math behind it. There's some black box stuff going on. I don't understand, but it's the National Academies. You kind of expect that. And they did do this for, I think, 100 different transit systems, and Madison outperformed their expectations. So, but here we do see that based on the fare, they would have expected a little bit of a ridership decrease. Based on increase in vehicle revenue miles, they would have expected a little bit of an increase in ridership. Based on population employment changes, they would have expected an increase. And let's see here, this one's the share of population and employment and transit supportive density. Even as Central Madison and the urban areas do become denser, there's still a lot of growth in the periphery. And so that overall makes it less transit supportive. Due to changes in gas prices, a whopping 4.2% expected difference in ridership there. Income percent of zero vehicle households, percent working at home, how many years since ride hailing started. They definitely project that ride hailing has a huge impact on transit ridership. But ultimately, they modeled that Metro would have lost almost 16% of ridership between 2012 and 2018, and Metro only actually lost 9.3. So, you know, Metro did better than the National Academies expected. Sorry for the delays between slides here. Computer is being very slow. Okay, here we go. Another fun chart. You know, probably the most important thing here is that between 2020 and 2023, there was an average annual increase of ridership of 27.4%. So basically that post-pandemic starting to climb. And then we have a projected annual population growth in the Madison urban area of 1.2%. So for these different scenarios going out, they all include that 1.2% population growth. The literature supports between 22 and 46% ridership boost on BRT routes. And so the high, medium, and low accounts for a 22% ridership boost, medium is a 34%, and a high is a 46% ridership boost here in 2025 on Route A, and again in 2029 on Metro Rapid Route B. So that's what those sort of larger jumps are.
And I see then, a hint. Sorry, Tom. Tom, would you have a quick question? And Liz?
Yeah, maybe two questions. One, this is for all of Metro, not just Route A and B, correct?
And yeah, then the boost is only for A and B, but there should also be trickle over effect to other routes, but the literature doesn't give enough guidance on that. So I just applied it straight to those routes.
And so this is a projection that you developed using projection tool?
Using Excel.
Yeah, so.
I put a bunch of factors in it. Like, so I've got the other things here to kind of explain where these are coming from. So all include a 3.6% growth from 2025 to 2026 from fare capping. That's another thing that the literature projects. And since fare capping went into effect in 2024, I'm applying that for that first complete year after fare capping went into effect. And then the low, medium, and high, it just sort of explains, this is not black box. This is as transparent as I can make it. Where at low, And I should have put these in a different order, but I didn't, so we'll just read it weirdly. Low is one third of that average annual ridership from 22 to 23, which was that 27.4%. So only one third of that gets applied in 24 and in 25, and that's it. In the medium scenario, two thirds of that 27.4% average annual ridership increases from 2020 to 2023 in 2024, and then only a third of it in 2025. And again, this is looking at that post-pandemic swing where we know it's coming back up. And I was unwilling, and the literature didn't really support that it would just continue at that 27% rate each year. Instead, kind of expecting it to taper off into that new normal with fewer people who are riding the bus to go to their office every single day, and instead they're teleworking 2 or 3 days a week. It didn't seem reasonable to say, yes, we're gonna just everybody's gonna come back, you know, coronavirus is gone, and so everybody's back to normal. So these are all sort of the staggered regrowth of the system, if that
Right.
makes any sense.
And then the big jump from 24 to 25, that represents the BRT. Is that right? You're
That's yeah, that well, that is well, it's a combination of things. So all of these again are applying one third to two thirds of that 27.4% growth between 20 and 23. And actually, there's a problem with this chart as well. Kayla and I have been working on it and can't figure it out. Tom, maybe you can help get Mike Chekvala to come talk to us. We can't get this shaded area to come over to 23, or for a white dot to show up. But that is actual ridership there, and so you
Okay.
can see that it has actually tapered off a little bit in terms of growth, which
Yeah.
supports that it's not just going to keep rocketing up. So the chart is a little tricky, and we just haven't figured out how to get that shading to come over for another year. But yeah, then this is the implementation of bus rapid transit, and then between 28 and 29 is rapid route B. That answer your question?
Yes-ish. I might phone you tomorrow.
All right.
Liz, do you have a question or comment?
Okay, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, Ben, you said that the blue line, that is total unlinked path boost, is associated with BRT. So
Yes.
it's not just BRT, it's associated with BRT. Okay. And then
So sorry. Yeah, the boost is only to rapid route A. So I looked at rapid route A's ridership, or route
okay.
A's ridership, and then I applied either a 22, 34, or 46% boost to the ridership of route A, not to the entire system. And then
Okay.
the same thing between 28 and 29, only to route B. And I think it's likely that there will be more spillover effects, that as it's easier for people in North Madison to get onto the whole system, that then they'll use other routes more as well. But again, that's so crystal ball-y that the literature just doesn't give me any guidance on that. And so this is the most honest and supported by the research projection that I can give.
And then my other question was just, are you, does this assume that the rest of the system, like service hours, remain pretty
The
much the
same.
same? Okay. Okay. And
Because that was,
frequencies don't really shift. Okay.
And that was the thing with the network redesign and with our regional transportation plan update, was that basically we were going to go back to the same number of service hours as we had in 2019, but they were going to be spread around differently. And so without there being another big pot of money for continuing operational expenses, I'm not assuming that all of a sudden Route L goes down to half hour service, and we have a new service to Wanakee and new service to Cottage Grove to serve Amazon Project Silver Eagle. This is everything stays the same. But there is growth because when this chart was put together, we didn't really have a contract with Monona, and now that Monona is going to be coming on board, that improved and extended Route 38, I think all by itself is going to be huge. I mean, that she doesn't live in Monona, but that route will serve Alex. And so, that's going to improve transit service for a lot of folks. And then finally, this gray line that just shoots off the chart here and is hidden behind this little text box. I just want to explain that. The fleet size is much larger than usual due to adding 62 new 60-foot buses to the fleet prior to beginning to dispose of the older 40-foot buses. They were planning to start disposing of those older buses this or in late 2024, but due to the issues with the doors and other things with the 60-foot buses, they couldn't afford to get rid of the older 40-foot buses and needed to keep those in service a little bit longer than expected. So those buses will now be disposed of in 2025, and the fleet will go back to around 100, I think it's 193 buses is what's expected. So being over 250 right now is it's not real. Those are not all in service.
That was
So,
helpful.
yeah, any other questions? I know there's a lot in that chart. All right. On-demand transit or microtransit is a mode with growing use throughout the United States. This mode connects people in lower density areas to fixed route transit and important destinations outside the service area, such as grocery stores, medical clinics, through the use of vehicles that respond to real-time and scheduled trip requests instead of operating on fixed routes. Green Bay Metro On Demand and FlexRide Milwaukee are the two systems offering this mode in Wisconsin currently. Costs per ride are projected to be higher than Metro Paratransit's operating cost of 36.52 cents a ride across the board for every area that I looked at. The two potential microtransit areas shown on this slide are estimated to be the lowest cost per ride of the 20 potential service areas that I examined using Remix on-demand software, which I just have to plug. I loved having the Remix software available through Metro. It's a fantastic platform to look at potential route changes. The on-demand standalone platform, well, it's sort of an addition. Remix was kind enough to give me a 1 month trial free subscription to. And so I banged out these 20 analyses and really appreciate that. It's been very, I think, very helpful. Unfortunately, not a tool I have access to anymore. Stoughton's shared ride taxi is essentially a form of on-demand transit service, and the Remix platform underestimates ridership on the system by approximately 132 rides a week. And you can see by these two areas at 206 rides and 200 rides a week, these are not, large numbers in terms of rides. So being off by 130 is a pretty large margin of error. And it overestimates the operating cost of Stoughton Shared Ride Taxi by nearly 100%. It's not clear why actual performance is so much better in Stoughton than Remix predicts, but it is worth noting that performance could be very different from the figures estimated by Remix. And so here, again, the two top performing microservice or microtransit service areas that I looked at, one that's sort of South Madison, between Fish Hatchery Road and Verona Road, and sort of the urbanized area of Fitchburg there. And then that could get folks access to several different grocery stores. And something that's typical with this type of service is that you could also, even though it's not within the service area, trips could be made to these superstores that are on the other side of Verona Road. They could still be considered in the service area, as well as connecting to bus rapid transit on Fish Hatchery Road, so that folks could get across this area relatively quickly and easily. North Side, this far North Madison, is currently, I would say, underserved between routes D and L. It's definitely an area we've heard a lot of squeaking from neighborhood folks that they don't have as much access to the transit system as they used to pre-network redesign. They also say quite often that, that the pick and save here, it's just outside the zone, is a really important area, and that Woodman's East, which is also outside of this area, is another important destination. And again, those in this modeling, those are actually still part of this North Side 2 area, where folks would be able to get a vehicle from far North Madison and get a one seat ride to Woodlands to do their lower cost grocery shopping. And so ultimately, this is something that you know, we've heard a lot about, and there is a letter in the packet from Jason Belongi at Access to Independence, bemoaning that in the TDP it says Metro does not anticipate having staff capacity to investigate potential for using the service model within the planning horizon of this TDP. And so want to make sure that that's all crystal clear. We have heard that. Given that the transit network redesign resulted in routes being farther from one another and that BRT stations are farther apart than typical bus stops, the MPO and Metro have heard repeatedly from people experiencing disabilities that the system is less accessible than it was pre-redesign. If funding can be secured, initiating a pilot program to evaluate this type of system would likely be welcomed by many people with disabilities and their advocates. And again, see the letter in the packet from Jason Belongi.
I'm really glad you brought that up because that was on my list to ask you about. So thank you for addressing that proactively, Ben.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate that you provided the opportunity for comment. I'm surprised in a way that we didn't get more feedback from people. Could you just comment briefly as to how widely you circulated that invitation for comment?
So we put it on our website as we do. We put it on our Facebook page. I sent out a notice. I think all of you should have received it. I think I sent it to 500 and some email addresses. Basically, all of our transit providers, our nonprofits, our Section 5310 recipients, community organizations. I don't recall exactly all of the categories that I used in our contact list, but it was a substantial number of people and agencies that I sent out emails to. The only comments that I received, the first was from Rachel Lichtman, the artist who drew that transit stop I showed earlier. I had misspelled her last name. And so we got that fixed. I think she let me know within 2 hours of me notifying her that it was out there. She informed me that her name was misspelled, and Kayla was busy with a outreach thing that afternoon. And so I think the next day the draft was updated with her corrected last name. And then the only other comment I received was the one from Jason Belongi. So I don't know if no one cares or if everyone thinks it just looks fine, but yeah, those are the two comments that I received on this plan.
Thank you.
For outreach and community engagement, the TDP is largely a technical document. It's focused on explaining the system. And so MPO and City of Madison staff, both Metro and Department of Civil Rights staff and Planning Division staff, met several times during the process to discuss this and determined it would be inappropriate to have a large public engagement process that could raise expectations beyond what the TDP could accomplish, such as undoing the transit network redesign, which is something that we heard from some folks. Also took this to the mayor's planning team, and the mayor herself agreed that we didn't want to raise expectations beyond what was reasonable. But to ensure that the voices of historically marginalized populations were heard, the MPO worked with community organizations to host focus groups with non-English speaking populations, people experiencing disabilities, and residents of the Vera Court neighborhood in North Madison, home to many recent immigrants, BIPOC, and low-income households. Host organizations were provided a stipend of between $1,200 and $1,500, depending on their level of support, and participants were provided with $50 Visa gift cards as remuneration for their time. Food or snacks were also provided at the in-person discussions. The Madison Area Chinese Community Organization Group was conducted virtually, so no food was provided there. Turnout at the Access to Independence meetings, we actually had two of them scheduled, was very low. So a disability-specific survey was made available online and promoted through disability rights and advocacy organizations. And so again, we had five focus groups that shows on the slide. The focus group at the Latino Academy of Workforce Development was led by Baltazar Dana Santana when he was their executive director, and it was held entirely in Spanish. I was there to answer questions and to prompt questions, but Baltazar really led the discussion and then provided the write-up and synopsis of what the discussion was. At Vera Court, we had two Spanish interpreters, and so I led the discussion, but there was concurrent translation into Spanish for folks who needed that. Also, in relation to the food, we, working with those community organizations, asked them what they thought their participants would appreciate. Latino Academy provided snacks there on their own. At Vera Court, we went through, the name of the market is escaping me, but it was a little Mexican market on the corner of Commercial and Sherman Avenue, and they do some really good tacos. And so we got a couple trays of tacos. Madison Area Chinese Community Organization, they don't have a physical space, and they thought it would be easier to reach their constituents virtually. So they basically reached out one-on-one and worked people through a series of prompts and collected that and then translated those comments back into English for us. The Wisconsin Hmong Association was held entirely in Hmong. In the picture there are interpreters and down in front in red, and Liz is behind me over on the side next to their executive director. We had the majority of participants were over the age of 65, and we had, I think, two chiefs of their clans there, and the, so yeah, it was as their executive director said, we have some very important people in the room tonight, and so it was a really great discussion, and I really treasure the input that they brought and that they provided. Access to independence, as I said, we scheduled two meetings because there was such overwhelming interest when they published that to their Facebook page. And unfortunately, we had one person show up to the first meeting and none to the second. Jason provided some of his staff to sit and talk to me about the experience of their clients. And clearly they were experienced, you know, one night it was kind of snowy and the other one, it was just dark and wet. They were held in December. And so it could be that weather played a part and that the folks who had expressed interest just couldn't make it. But be it as it may, we ended up putting out a special survey for people with disabilities to try and fill that gap and hear that, hear those responses. All of those responses are, as well as write-ups of the different focus groups, are included in the Transit Development Plan, I think as Appendix F. And then we also had a survey for the general public. Again, all of those responses and metrics and analysis are also included in Appendix F. And then we also considered the feedback that we received through the Connect Greater Madison 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. That was, you know, just adopted a couple of years ago. It's not old or stale yet. And then also looking at feedback from other outreach and engagement efforts. So there were a bunch of interviews that were conducted by the artist, I think Jeannie Gao, who was selected to do the 1% for Art mural that will be on the Metro bus barn along East Washington Avenue. And so, you know, I reviewed the comments of people that she interviewed, and as appropriate, incorporated those in discussion about transit stops and benches and weather and barriers to using transit. So didn't necessarily, you know, do a lot of community-wide outreach and engagement, but really tried to be mindful about also hearing what people had already said in other forums and incorporating that. I should also say that barring this meeting with the Wisconsin Hmong Association that your fellow board member Liz Callen was at, none of the other meetings had any Metro or City of Madison staff other than myself present. And that was intentional because we didn't want folks to feel any restraint in if they were angry. And there was some anger, some people who were really unhappy with losing the north transfer point, for example, and having a much harder time getting from the north side to other places they need to go. And so, you know, for those other meetings, we wanted to make sure that folks felt free to speak their minds. And in talking to leadership at the Wisconsin Hmong Association, he didn't feel that that was going to be an issue. And so Liz came and participated in that discussion. So here are a couple slides of takeaways. Routes and BRT stops being farther apart makes access difficult for people with limited mobility, physical disabilities, cognitive disabilities, low vision, et cetera. This will become a larger problem as the area population ages. Transfers are more difficult without timed transfers at transfer points, but many riders did not feel safe at transfer points. And this is not in the TDP because we are still, Prasad and I are, and actually I've handed it over to Prasad, and he is chugging along through our onboard survey data that was collected in April and verifying, unfortunately, a lot of folks, if they get on the G route and they ride through the south transfer point and the bus turns into an H, they say, oh, I transferred, but it was a one seat ride. They never got off the bus. They didn't actually transfer. So we're going through and reviewing that information and making sure that everything is as accurate as it can be. But preliminary data from that indicates that fewer riders are transferring than during the 2015 pre-network redesign onboard survey. In 2015, 18.9% of riders transferred in order to complete a trip. And of the first 1,300 surveys that we've reviewed and verified from the 2024 survey, only 11.2% of riders transferred. So, and yeah.
How do you separate out the fact that maybe part of the trend is because there's less geographic coverage and routes for them to transfer to? How do you?
I mean, that
ease out that data.
That is a point, you know, and I wonder, because we've heard in comments, and you know, if you read through the comments, especially from the disability survey, there are some people who say, I can't use Metro anymore. And so, you know, if they used to ride and then they had to transfer, is it really good that they're not transferring anymore because they're not riding at all? But I can't measure.
Or they're walking further, or they're, you know, depending on how else they might find travel. I was just curious if there's a way to separate the, you know, it's probably hard to get, it's hard to get data like that, right?
Yeah. So that is part of the onboard survey. And one of the things that Prasad's working on, we basically, because this all, the onboard survey is not so much about people's perception of Metro, although there are some questions about that. Its primary purpose is that it feeds into the regional travel model. And so we're working on going through and geocoding, and there are four really important points. We need to know where the trip started, its origin. We need to know where they got on the bus they are currently on, where they're going to get off the bus they're currently on, and where their final destination is. And so there we're looking, and they've also hopefully indicated how they're making the rest of the trip. So they might say, I walked one block from my origin to my boarding location. I rode the bus, I got off the bus, and I rode my bike 3 miles to my destination. Or if there are transfers involved, we have to figure out, okay, there was their origin. They walked 3 blocks to the bus. They rode the bus. They likely transferred where these two routes intersect. And then they rode the bus to their final destination 6 miles away. So there is a little bit of guesswork. I'd say it's more detective work than guesswork. If we can't make a reasonable conclusion, we end up not including that trip in our geocoding.
Right.
And so we're trying to make sure that it's as accurate as possible within reason. It gets really tricky when people say, I started at the university and I got on the bus at university and charter. Okay, great. I know where you got on the bus. But the campus is huge. So unless I can infer that they said, oh, well, I walked 2 blocks to that bus stop, it's very difficult to know how far, you know, what building they started at, how far they've traveled on campus. But we're doing our best to flag things in such a way that it'll be useful in the travel model, working closely with David Canning to make sure that we're coding things correctly so that it can fit into the travel model and be useful there. And it's a process. I mean, we started on this geocoding work in October and we're a third of the way through, but at least now there are two of us doing it and not just me plugging away.
I'm recognizing Liz right now.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting discussion about the transfer points. And I think, Ben, I think you recognize that the redesign was designed to reduce transfers. Like that, the old
Absolutely.
system was a transfer-based system, and the new system is intentionally not that. But I think one thing that might be interesting, because you do have, or you will have, origin and destination information, is to compare that with the previous system to see if those people today are trying to go from point A to point B, but the old system was still in place,
Right.
would they have had to transfer?
Right.
Obviously, you don't, that doesn't necessarily, equate to saying that would naturally happen, because, like you said, maybe people aren't riding because because there's changes in the network. But I think, that would be, just kind of an overall interesting analysis to do, whether it's included or not, just to kind of get a snapshot of that when we have that data.
And that's a really good point, Liz. Thanks for bringing that up. The network redesign was, as you said, intended to make it so people didn't have to transfer. It wouldn't have been fair to eliminate transfer points and design a system that required lots of transfers. that it wasn't our intention. And we in our meetings where we would actually sit down and look at routes and draw out routes for the network redesign. I had StreetLight Insights pulled up, and we would be talking about an area, and I would run a quick analysis about, okay, where are people who live in this neighborhood actually going? And we found that a lot of folks who live around the periphery of the community, the outside of the Beltline, are not traveling in and out of the urban core. They're traveling around the outside of the Beltline, generally only 3 to 4 miles in a direction. No matter whether you're looking at the Allied neighborhood or whether you're looking at east of Monona or whether you're looking at the Cottage Grove, Milwaukee area, for the most part, folks are traveling sort of that circumferential route direction, and that's where the G and the H came from. And those routes were intended to make it so that those folks could make those trips that used to require at least one, if not two or three transfers to get around. And they can now avoid going to the south transfer point. They can avoid going to the west transfer point, changing a bus and traveling out of direction so they can get a different bus that goes where they actually want to go. So I think that I think this is real. I think that we've dramatically reduced across the board the number of people who are having to transfer. I've been in communication with Tom quite a bit about this over the last couple of weeks as he works on annual reports. I didn't put all of the stuff we've been talking about in here because it's not actually in the transit development plan. but it is, I think, an important thing to point out that across the board, Hispanic, Black, African American, Asian, white, lower income, higher income, it doesn't matter across the board. It's roughly half as many people are having to transfer to complete their trips. And again, that's preliminary data. That's looking at roughly a third of the total number of surveys that were submitted. So things could change, but it's been pretty consistent as I've done that after we had I think it was after we had 300 surveys geocoded and verified, and then again after 1100, and now again after 1300, and the numbers are staying pretty representative and similar. All right, couple more takeaways here, and this is my last slide. So ridership is expected to continue to increase and is likely to reach and sustain pre-pandemic levels in 2025. I'm not going to put money on it, but I think it's likely. North-South BRT will likely boost ridership again in 2029. Factors that affect ridership the most are largely within the control of policymakers and system leadership. Those are internal factors. But even external factors such as land use, residential density, and job density, and parking policies are also within control of policymakers. So I think leadership of all of the communities in the metro service area and areas that are not currently within the service area, such as Cottage Grove. And Wanakee, there's potential, and that if leaders are strong and adopt transit supportive policies, that we can grow this system and we can grow ridership and continue to make it a better, more efficient system for everybody. And that is my presentation on the draft transit development plan.
Thank you, Ben. Nice, very nicely done. It's understandable why that took some effort, and frankly, it benefited from the system, you know, not having done the work until after the system redesign and the introduction of BRT, the East-West BRT. And, you know, I think there's no harm in having waited with this until now. I also appreciate your proactive response to engaging the various communities you listed and responding to Jason, his concerns. So thank you. Anybody have any questions or comments that
have been? You're welcome. Thank you.
No, I just want to thank you as well, Ben. And thank you for when I ask you for questions here and there. You send me an email back with answers. So thank you for doing this effort and helping us evaluate our effectiveness.
I guess I would be curious. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Ben.
It's been a great project. It's been very informative. I've learned a lot, and I've gotten to do a lot of research in terms of, you know, what the National Academies say about ridership and what other communities are experiencing. It's been great and also heartening that even post COVID, we can get back to pre-COVID ridership. I do believe it.
And maybe I missed it. I don't think so. But you made a comment about how you were careful to make sure that as you had some of these meetings, you conducted some of these meetings, that you didn't, that you were sensitive to the ability of people to freely express themselves. And so intentionally, you know, not having a lot of Madison staff there, for example. With that, in that context, have you gotten a lot of input from Metro Transit staff on the work you've done to date?
Yes. This is covered in the early sections of the TDP, but I didn't go over it with the presentation. I probably should have. I had a multi-tiered level of review, and that was based on conversations with Metro and with the various community and organization staff who are represent the service partners. So UW Health and UW itself, and Fitchburg and Verona and Middleton, and MMSD and Sun Prairie, all of those folks communicate through Mikrut Rush at Metro. And so I reached out to them and I said, how do you want to do this? In the past, there have been like in-person meetings and everybody goes over the document and we have a long discussion about draft chapters and all of that. And everybody said, no thanks, not interested, it's COVID, let's just do this remotely. And so my first sort of level of review was I was working with Connor Mountford at Metro, and I would bounce things off him first. And then I would go to a larger group of staff at Metro, including Justin Sturenberg, who'd always be CC'd, and Sean Hedgepeth, their planning manager, planning chief, was always CC'd. And I would give them a month to review draft chapters, and then I'd get the comments back. And then I would, as soon as those changes had been made, or if they were substantial changes, I would turn around and give it back to them again to review.
Good.
After that, I would give it to all of the service partners. So only after Metro had approved would I give it to the service partners. For the first couple of chapters, that was how it worked. And then I learned the Department of Civil Rights, the city of Madison, also wanted to be involved in that sort of first cut. And so several staff at DCR then joined the Metro team in that sort of first run look at the draft chapters. Then it would go to the service partners. Then after that, it went to all of the outlying community representatives who were interested. I reached out to them all individually and you know, made sure they knew what was coming. And so the administrator for Cross Plains and staff in the Village of Oregon and staff in Cottage Grove and Windsor and DeForest and Wanakee all received the draft document as sort of a last round of staff review. And then after that was all done, Again, if there were major changes through those, then it would go back to Metro and sort of start all over again. So all of the text in the plan and all of the charts and graphics have been reviewed by somebody, some staff with the service partners or the communities multiple times, and then it all ended up into the final draft plan that you have before you.
So the methodology that Tom Lynch was asking about earlier, about the assumptions that go into low, medium, high, that were based on the spreadsheet work that you did, that was all part of the review and analysis?
Yeah, I mean, I sent it out to everybody. I don't think that anybody commented on that at any point. you know, and I in talking to Mike Chekvala and folks at Metro, and you know, and a lot of the stuff in the financial side with Scott Korth at Metro, you know, the general comment was, yeah, that makes sense. That's defensible. Yeah. Nobody could really offer any suggested changes. So
okay. Good. I'm glad to hear all that. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Liz?
I do have one more question, and I apologize if I missed this from the beginning, but what is, so I understand that there are not recommendations in this and we're not adopting anything, and there will be recommendations developed in 2025. So can you just like briefly explain what the plan is for that?
Yeah, so I have already drafted, so Appendix A in the 2013 to 2017 TDP, was service planning guidelines and recommendations. I have drafted those based on the plan, but Metro staff has, although I think Connor has probably reviewed them all, I don't think anybody else has had any time. And I've actually gone back and forth with Connor several times about, you know, sort of the format and the organization of it. But then Justin asked to just postpone. He actually wanted to postpone the whole plan until 2025. And I said, please no, because if that happens, then I'm going to have another year's worth of data. I have to update all of the charts again. and I should also on that note that a lot of the financial stuff, I don't look past 2019 in the plan, because the influx of strange and unusual and unexpected funding through CRISA and CARES, and ARPA and all of those other bills, we can't count on again. And so they don't really tell us anything about the future. Then we get this huge influx of funding through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. But again, can we count on that? And so I thought it made sense to really kind of look at 2019 levels, that with a new administration coming in, will we go back to 2019 federal funding levels? Will we sustain those IIJA levels? Again, that's a crystal ball thing that I don't have any idea how to deal with that, but it seemed the most prudent to assume that 2019 funding levels continue. Hopefully we don't get reduced below those levels. I think that would be absolutely terrible, but I can't count on keeping the huge influx in funding that the IIJA brought.
Okay. Well, thank you for this discussion. We do have in the packet the resolution that was a concept for what we could do as a board. What are people's thoughts on resolution number one? I can quickly go to it here, or can you display that, please?
Oh, I don't actually have that pulled up. Looks like Alex is going to pull it up.
Doug.
Yeah, I would say that we don't adopt the plan and wait for the recommendations to be developed, which sounds like is consistent with past practice. I mean, as Ben said, the plan is the plan. So. That's my comment.
Okay. I appreciate that. Anybody else have thoughts on that?
Are you all able to see what I'm sharing?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, at least I may. I mean, I assume we are. Okay. Alex, your thoughts in putting that together, or your staff's thoughts in putting that together?
Well, I would say that we've kept vacillating in two directions, one sort of reflecting exactly what Doug had stated. But on the other hand, this represents a tremendous amount of work and right. A lot of interesting information. And so in that way, it could still be very worthwhile for this board to adopt it. But, you know, like I said, we really, it could go either way. So
I guess,
go ahead, Ben.
I totally agree with what Doug said as well. However, there's something kind of hollow about having this document and having it not adopted. I was actually really surprised when I read the resolution from the last couple TDPs and saw that both the city and the policy board only adopted the recommendations, not the plan itself. Mm-hmm. And that just seemed, I mean, I can understand why you'd want to adopt the recommendations, but the plan still, again, has a lot of important information and you know, community feedback, and a lot of work went into it. And if the policy board chooses to adopt it, then that it kind of validates it. And it says, this is real. This isn't just staff, you know, doing their own thing because staff is weird and who knows what they were thinking. So right, there's a part of me
that, the input being heard, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd like Doug and Tom to comment, please.
Yeah, I know we've run into this dilemma, and I'm sure other communities do too. When you have these plans done, then what do you do? You know, do you, because if you adopt them, it's sort of like you're saying you're going to do whatever the plan calls for. A lot of times we just we'll take action, but only to accept the plan. So it's sort of in between, I guess, and would be an in-between possibility.
I guess I didn't see the full plan in the meeting handout or meeting packet. I guess it is posted on the website under transit, but I didn't look at that.
Here's what I propose. You're on the same wavelength of what I was thinking too. I would recommend that we postpone, that we take this up again at our next meeting and have this discussion and give people, members, more time in the next few weeks to consider the presentation we just had from Ben, and which I've learned some things, even though I reviewed sections of the document over the last few months as it was developed. But I'd like to make sure, especially since we have a couple of members not here, I think taking a month to think about the conversation we just had, I understand Ben's MPO staff's comments about the magnitude of work that went into this. It was a multi-year effort, and I can appreciate wanting to have some sort of a bow, wrapping it up with a bit of a bow, but also sensitive to the idea that additional work is needed, developing the recommendations. So, Tom, I think what you're saying is let's take a month to give a chance to review and digest what we heard.
Yeah, or just to, like right now, I'm paging through the plan under the transit, you know, website, and I'm seeing a lot of the graphics in the plan that you presented tonight, but maybe just one more meeting just so we could through that, if that'd be okay. It says it's 105 pages, right? And so I've written reports, 105 pages takes some time to write, you know, it's not a small effort. So I want to acknowledge your effort and the desire to make it more than just,
and perhaps, when if someone makes a motion to adopt at a future meeting, Mark, they could state that acknowledging that recommendations will be developed, in 25 document or.
Yeah, and I would encourage you, Doug, since you've expressed this view very well. If you have some tweaks to the resolution, I would welcome your. Contacting directly or Alex and Ben, working with them on some alternate language that you'd be more comfortable with. But I do share Ben and Alex's view, it's, at least from what I kind of read between the lines here, that it would be good to have some sort of acknowledgement of the completion of this phase of this work. So, and Rochelle, I think you don't have your hand up anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
Tom.
Yeah, actually, can I make a motion to?
I was hoping you would.
to table this until the next meeting?
Let's just postpone to the next meeting. Yeah. Okay. All right, there's a motion to postpone. Is there a second?
Field will second.
Field seconds. Any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. Anyone opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you all. Appreciate your consideration.
Yep. You're welcome. And I appreciate the length of time we spent on this. This was an important topic. It merited the discussion that we had, I feel. So, Ben, thank you for that.
Thank you. See you next month.
Item 6, announcements and staff reports. And this is where we officially can welcome Prasad. Alex, yeah. I'll turn it to you.
Real quickly, before we do that, what I've been doing, working with Jason Valerius from CARPC, rather than having the standing item where you read a cover sheet and all of that, I just sort of talked to him about what, if it's more of a minor thing, is there something you'd like to share? And the thing that we talked about sharing with you is that CARPC is leading a collaborative effort with planning staff, including ourselves, but City of Madison, Dane County, to work on looking at different ways to project population growth for Dane County. For those who work in planning, the planning world, it's probably not, you're no stranger to the fact that the DOA, Department of Administration projections that come out tend to be lower than what really happens. They overproject in our rural towns, and they underproject for the City of Madison and surrounding cities and villages. So there's been this ongoing effort. It's a good one. It's collaboration among organizations coming up with different methods to do it. And that effort's ongoing. And we hope that information will be real, you know, useful for a lot of projects and communities and organizations going forward. So I just wanted to mention that. And then more importantly, more interestingly, is to introduce Prasad. I did a little bit earlier. He started very recently. He moved to the City of Madison just 1 week prior to his start date of December 9th. So that's a big change. And I think from here, I will go ahead and ask Prasad to give himself an introduction. And happy to welcome him.
Welcome, Prasad.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Prasad Pakirisamy. Pronounce he, him. I've recently joined the MPO as a transportation planner in place of Colleen, and started December 9th. And I finished my master's in urban planning from UIUC, and I did my bachelor's also in planning from India, from School of Planning and Architecture, Bhopal. In between, I worked for like 4 years, focusing on public transportation planning in India, on gender and transportation and safety in public transport and cities, and did some community development work when I was in Champaign as part of Independent Media Center. It's a social justice organization there in Champaign. And that's been my broad, so I predominantly worked on transportation work since I graduated in urban planning in my bachelor's, and I've been doing that in India mostly. And then I've gotten this opportunity to work here in Madison, and I met a few of you before in different meetings, and excited to working in future also with all of you and other projects. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. On behalf of my colleagues, we welcome you. Any other announcements from anybody? I know we also have Michelle from WISDOT. I know you were at the last meeting, but I don't know if we've officially met. I can't remember when you joined exactly, but it's been recent. So I just wanted to acknowledge for those of you who haven't met her yet that Michelle is a relatively new member. And then also we have a new alder that's going to be joining the board, MGR Govinda Rajan. I'll get it right, I hope, when he joins us next time. So any other membership updates, Alex? No.
No.
Okay. And then we also have, I see Firefly's AI note taker, Jessica. So who I was curious about who that is.
I believe that that is an additional tool that Kayla is using.
That's what I suspected it was. I just had to
call it. It's one that Carpsey has tried out.
Okay. So,
yeah. I wish they didn't give it a name, but you know how AI is.
Yeah. No, I had to call it out because I thought that was kind of interesting. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
We'll move to adjourn.
Okay, Williams and Lynch seconded. All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And
aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you. We'll see you all in February.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Doug, sorry, it wasn't quite as fast Thank as you. What you see did.
But... Yeah, that was a little slow, Mark, but that was important. That was a good discussion.
All right, take care.
See you guys. For that many years and that many pages. And
right.
It's a good trend. I mean, well, you guys are perhaps a little different, but just all.